Tonight, the Gamecasters played Cosmic Encounter and Crokinole. The topic for the evening is going to be filler games, and we have a top five for you. Stay tuned. Here we are.
It's episode 10.
Did you ever think we'd make it to episode 10?
I wouldn't believe it.
Wow.
But here we are.
We made it. I am Ryan James.
And I'm Jeremy Pete.
And we are the Gamecasters. And you have successfully made it to episode 10. Unless you just randomly clicked on episode 10 first, and this is the first podcast you're listening to. In which case, welcome to episode 1. So, game night tonight was a little different. We had kind of fused the game groups together. So the game group I was in before I moved into my new house, the guy that runs that, Bill, he's out of town this weekend, this week. He goes on a cruise like every 3 weeks. And this was, you know, one of the cruises he went on. So all the guys I used to play with, which also happened to be some of my best friends, ended up coming over. And we fused that game group with the new game group.
Yeah.
Sans John. John wasn't here. He's got something with his cat. He's killing it or something.
Oh, man.
That's really not true. He's moving.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they just, you know, got to figure out something to do with his house and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he couldn't make it tonight. But that's okay because we ended up having six people. So it's kind of perfect because, you know, seven's fine. It's just always harder to get games played. We might have had to split up,
you know,
the groups that way. And so when I was deciding what to play, I had in my mind that we were going to play Between Two Cities, which is a pretty cool game that can play a lot of people quickly, like Seven Wonders is.
Yeah, six people would be good for that game.
I think actually. So, too. It would have been great if we had time for it. I would like to play it.
Yeah.
This damn podcast just drains all of our time.
I know, jeez.
But so we were going to play a different game a couple weeks ago, and I really wanted to play it because it's like my favorite game, spoiler alert. but either Rob or John, I can't remember which one, dropped out, and so it's only going to be three of us, and it's not good to play this particular game with three, and that game is Cosmic Encounter. It's my favorite. I would say it really cemented itself as my favorite game in this play of it, too, because I won.
Did you win?
Yeah, I did. Me and Eric.
It was a shared victory.
What was the word you said at the end there?
Victory.
That's right. So so anyway, we play Cosmic Encounter. It can play up to eight. I do not recommend playing with any more than six.
Yeah.
Six is usually even... that's the high end of what I like to play with. Four is okay, good. Five is my favorite player count.
Yeah.
It moves. There's enough interaction. It's great.
Yeah.
Six is about the high end that you want to play with that game, and I'll explain why in a second. It can play 7 and 8 with expansions, which I have, of course, because...
It seems like it'd be too long.
It is. It's always too long. Well, it's too long. I mean, if you're unlucky enough to be to the right of the start player, you sometimes don't get a turn for, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's too long. Yeah.
You know? So before... Well, I'll explain Cosmic Encounter a little bit. It is a game of ridiculous chaos. It originally came out in the 70s.
I was surprised by that.
Right?
I thought it was more of a modern or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Fantasy Flight has created the most recent edition. It came out in 2008. And it is, it looks new, you know, because they updated all the graphics on it. It's got different components, and it's really amazing. I love it. But there's been so many different versions. Avalon Hill had a version. I think Eon might have been the original version. I can't remember. There's been a few different versions over the years. And it's one of those games that just, it's so popular. It just sticks around, you know, it keeps coming back and because it's just, because it keeps coming back into print because it's just so popular, you know, and it's Tom Vassell's favorite game and I'm sure that helps it.
Yeah. He kind of plugs it, you know, pushes it.
Yeah. He loves
it.
He loves it. And that, you know, a lot of people listen to him and watch his videos and stuff and they see that and then they, you know, really enjoy it and more people come to the hobby that way and it's great. So what the game is basically it's set in space, right? The game's Cosmic Encounter, right? You're in the cosmos. Yeah, you have five planets, Each player has five planets, and they have four ships on each planet. That's how you start off. The goal of the game is to extend your ships around to other players' planets, and then you're establishing what's called a colony. If you establish five colonies on other players' systems or planets, if you get five of those, you win the game. As soon as you get to five, you win the game. It's not that simple.
No.
So it's so freaking chaotic and awesome. And, oh my gosh, it just like ensconces you in the nerd.
There's a lot of negotiating and bickering back and forth. And
oh yeah, there's trash talk going on. There's fisticuffsmanship. I'm just kidding. There's a lot of awesome backstabbery back and forth. There's take that. There's, you know, great swings of fate, which, you know, just create this uproarious, you know, like, show of emotion from you, you know, when something goes your way. And then the same token, it's the opposite way when something doesn't go your way.
Yeah.
You know, and I love it for... I love social games, you know. I mean, if you can't tell, I like to talk. And I really, really like games where I can, you know, flex my negotiation muscle a little bit and just kind of impress my opinion on the other people. And it's just fun to get in there and, you know, especially with your best friends who you're not going to offend them. I mean, you know, everyone knows you're just playing around. It's all in good fun. And, you know, you're trying to get your cards and play your cards the best way to, you know, sustain.
And you're losing your cards as victory. You go.
Oh, you're losing your cards like crazy. It's ridiculous, but it's so awesome. And I probably did a horrible job explaining, but just go check it out on Board Game Geek. Watch some videos. It's
worth
fantastic. It's so great. I mean, well, that's what I think. I mean,
I've never played a game like it, to be honest with you.
That's a great compliment to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
And it's from the 70s, for crying out loud, you know?
I mean, I don't know if you've played any other ones like that are negotiating. Like, I can't even think of
anything. It's very, very unique. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of negotiation games. Have you played Chinatown?
No, I haven't.
That's a really, you know, popular negotiation.
It is? Game. I didn't know there was negotiation.
I don't know. I really wanted to play it. There was a convention we were at, and I wanted to play it so hard. I was, like, asking this other guy to play it, and he just, you know.
Over and over
again. He just didn't want to play it, I guess. I don't know. It was weird. But anyway, I've heard that's a really good negotiation game. Bonanza is a really good negotiation game, but they're nothing like Cosmic Encounter.
Yeah.
This game, I mean, what did you think about it?
I think it's really good. I think the whole time I was entertained, there wasn't, even though it wasn't my turn, there's always something going on.
You're still involved. So one of the things that can happen and that Jeremy's kind of talking about right there is when it's not your turn, you know, say it's my turn and it's not going to be Jeremy's turn for four more. You know, there's four people in between us, so he's not going to go for a while. It's my turn. I draw a card, and the card tells me who I can attack. So the card says, okay, I'm attacking, you know, Jeff, right? A friend of mine. I put the gate in front of him, and I put some ships out there to attack him. And then I get to ask anybody I want to ally with me. So this is a way Jeremy can get involved. I can say, Jeremy, ally with me. If we win, we'll both go up a point, basically, and we'll get establish a colony. But then Jeff can be like, no, Jeremy, won't you come on my side? Because you can get some sweet defensive rewards if we win and you help me. And it's just there's a lot of awesome.
There's a lot of things to balance, and that's what makes it really fun.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, you know, do I do defense because I need cards? Or, you know, do I go for the points?
Yeah.
You know, like inch your way to that. And there's only 5 points.
Right.
So you have to do that.
Yep.
You know?
And you can't just sit in the back in the wings and hoard all your cards and not go for it. You got to kind of get out there and do it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so much fun.
I think you have to have the right group, though. You know,
they
have to be into it.
I mean, you can say that about a lot of games, but you're right. This one, more than a lot of games, you really need people who are going to engage.
Yeah.
If people are just, you know, sitting quietly, you know, like mechanically playing cards and not showing any emotion or going, you know, getting into it, it's not going to be as fun, I think. You really need to not play a role, you know, but you really have to just kind of get in there. So the best part about the game that we didn't even talk about are the alien powers. So the game is very cool as itself. You know, you play and then you negotiate with people to attack you, but then everyone has their own individual unique alien power that just does its own. And this might have been one of the first games maybe that had this kind of thing. I mean, how many games have copied this where variable player powers? I have my own power. You have your own power. I mean, Cosmic Encounter is probably one of the first games that had anything like that.
It has to be, right? If it's from the 70s.
Sure. So, and it still holds up. So the base game comes with 50 different alien races, which all have their own unique power, and that creates a balance issue. I mean, it's not 100% balanced. You know, a lot of alien powers are stronger or weaker, you know, than others. It's not perfect in that way. The game kind of self-balances, which we'll talk about in a minute, as kind of a negative, honestly, in my opinion. But the base game itself comes with 50 alien races, and then there's 3-4 expansions to it. I can't remember. I have them all. But they each one of those comes with, like, 25 to 30 more aliens.
That's a lot.
So I have, like, 170
even the base to pick game, from.
Yeah, even just the base game, you'll never...
Yeah, it'll take a long time.
It'll be... I mean, the permutations are will go on for the rest of your life, and you never play them all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you play with five players and... you had different combinations, there's no way.
I kind of like the idea of keeping that stack of the aliens unknown, and you just draw
one. And so I think the game tells you to randomly take two.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. You randomly take two, and then you pick one.
Yeah.
The only reason I went through it is because I wanted to make the first play. You know, because I've had plays of this where we've randomly picked kind of crappy aliens, and it's just like,
doesn't really work.
I didn't
out.
Even get to, yeah, some aliens you don't even like. Jeff kind of had a bad draw after he was being reincarnated over and over. He had this cool alien card thrown at him that made him, if you lose an encounter, you get to draw a new alien card the whole game. Normally you just have one the whole game. Jeff got to keep drawing one every time he lost.
Yeah.
And it was cool because you're like, I never know what I'm going to get. You know, he kept getting ones that just didn't really work out for him. You know, and it was kind of a little frustrating to him, probably. But it was cool because he could just lose and do a draw again, you know? And it's really, really cool that way, and in just endless combinations of aliens. Yeah. However, the one detractor I'll say to that is, you know, the game kind of, since the powers are all, you know, kind of skewed, one player might be stronger and going up, but then that player's going to have a hard time because of the kind of self-balancing mechanic, which is just attack the leader.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I don't really... That's like,
or just not allow them to do anything.
Yeah.
That's kind of... I kind of ran into that.
It can be a problem. A little bit. It wasn't terrible in this play.
No.
It happened a little bit, but it wasn't... it was still fun. It was never not fun, but I've had plays of it where it's been not fun. Where the game's gone on for 2 and 3 hours, three and a half hours, and it's like... oh my gosh, I don't care at this point. I don't even care.
Somebody just win.
I don't care. Heather, come in here and chop everyone's head off with a sword. and then she wins. You know, it's been like plays like that have happened where it's just been... but I've had equal to maybe more plays where it's been like tonight, where everybody was involved. Everyone was like, you know, like everyone had seemed to have a really, really great engaged time. There was nobody that was just sitting back like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You do know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what would you rate it, do you think?
It's up there. I would say between 7 and 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's a 10 for me.
Yeah.
It's one of my very, very few 10s. There's only 3 games that I rate a 10, and that's one of them. Maybe you'll hear the other ones in a different podcast.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll. Actually, I might have even talked about one already, actually. Actually, I'm pretty sure I have. Anyhow, I rated a 10. I love it. It's my favorite game, I would say. It was my favorite game when I got into the hobby. It's my favorite game now. It's fantastic.
That's cool that you've kept playing it.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah, it's great. So that was Cosmic Encounter. And then after that, there were 6 of us here, and Cosmic Encounter ended at like 20 after 9.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So it was about two and a half hours. I mean, maybe 2 hours if you get rid of the rules explanation. And, you know, I felt bad because, you know, they were like, oh, I know you guys want to do your podcast. And we usually like to get started around 9:30, little bit, you know, later than that, but... I felt bad. I mean, the guys from the Elder Game group had come from, you know, like...
kind of a distance.
Yeah, it's not so far, but it's far enough that it's like one game and leave. That's kind of weak. Yeah. So, Jeff is the Crokinole god, right? I mean, he's just amazing at Crokinole, so he really wanted to play because he just enjoys it. So you can tell when he's playing, he's just having a blast. I mean, because he's kicking the shit out of every single person that plays. No, but he generally enjoys the game, and so he wanted to get a game of it going, and who's going to say no to that? It's Crokinole. Crokinole's amazing.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Jeremy and I sat on the sidelines and kind of worked on our lists for tonight, and Jeff, his brother Dave, Rob, and Eric all played. And, I mean, Jeff and Eric were on a team, Dave and Rob were on a team. It was, close for playing
like
Jeff.
Were...
Yeah, they won, like, they were up, like, they were only up, like, 60 points.
Seemed like they went back and forth pretty good.
Yeah, usually Jeff knocks you out and 15 seconds and you know, they lasted a little bit of time. It was respectable, I'll say. They technically didn't lose because they stopped playing before the game was over.
Did you get that picture?
No, damn it. So I guess it's not. It never happened if it's not photo evidence. But, but I mean, we've talked endlessly, I think, about Crokinole and how much we love that game. But it's just, it's one of those games that just, you know, you bring it out and everyone has fun.
Yeah.
You screw up and it's frustrating as all get out, but it's...
And then you have another turn.
Yeah.
So it's...
Right. You're right. You're not, you don't screw up and then it's over. You know, and if it is, if the game's over, you can just, I mean...
Play a new one.
Yeah, we've played 10 games in an hour, you know. Yeah. You can do that. It's just, it's awesome.
It's fast enough.
So that was Game Night Tonight.
Yep.
Some great stuff. I mean, it was awesome. It was, I mean, two games, but it was great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a good game.
So that, that brings us into the topic of the evening, which is, I'm going to let you go ahead and lead us in.
We're talking about filler games tonight. We're
talking about filler games tonight.
And it's going to be the top
and
five.
And it's going to be the top five.
Right.
We're doing a list.
Right on.
We're checking it twice. We're going to find out who's filler and rhyme with me.
I don't know what
Bo Bice from American Idol.
What?
I'm going to turn this off now. How do I stop this? Okay, so filler games. For those of you that don't know what a filler game is, it's basically, it's called that because it's a game that fills time between, you know, longer games.
Yep.
That is not to minimize filler games in any way. There's no, some people think of a negative connotation when it comes to filler games. Like, oh, that's minimizing the game. No, that's not really what it's saying, what I think of a filler game. It's literally just duration of time.
Yeah.
You know, if we're thinking about, like, I really want to play Shogun and I really want to play Cosmic Encounter, you know, but I don't want to just do those two back to back because they're so ouch, you know, like my brain needs, I need a break. Let's fill that space in between those two games, maybe cleanse our palate even, right? With a little bit of ginger, you know? You know what I mean? Like with a filler game. So it can kind of reset your brain. If you're playing a game like Shogun that just kind of takes a lot out of you mentally, you know, you don't want to play.
Another, you know, Kalis
right after that because you're so taxed. So you play something like Red 7, and it kind of like, my brain is able to calm down a little bit. But that does not take anything away from the fun of those games. That's not saying one is better than the other, one is not better than the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to rate the longer games, you know, a little higher. I tend to do that only because I feel like, I don't know, like, the payoff is better on those kinds of games. You know, where a filler game's over so quick, I don't get that great, you know, like, I did it, I won, I pulled out the victory as much, you know, in a filler game.
You don't have the investment of victory.
Yeah, so, but it's a double-edged sword, though, because it's also, if you lose, you're not like, damn it, I just sunk 3 hours into this game, and I lost on the last turn because I was stupid, and now you're mad. You know, if you do that in a filler game, whatever, you just play another one, and... But they can be
just as fun, if not
if
funner,
not more
if
fun
not
factor
funner, you know, more fun.
That's definitely a word, Jeremy.
Is it?
I just asked Webster and he said it's funner. So yeah, I've had a lot more fun a lot of times playing filler games. The fun factor in filler games is higher, I think, on average than for me. And I mean, fun factor is obviously a complete, you know, subjective thing.
Huge.
But for me, I tend to have more laughing moments, fun moments in filler games.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
Than I do in longer strategy type games. But they're both it's just different strokes for different folks. Although, and I like it all.
I do have to say too that they don't have to be played between games. They're also very good for before or when you're waiting for somebody to arrive.
Correct.
Or after the game night.
I'm with you.
When things are,
say it again,
kind of
preach it, boy.
Yeah. You know, kind of winding down for the night.
Mm-hmm.
You got people, you know, hanging out. Couple people left.
Yeah, well, it's like Crokinole is kind of a good example.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a fillery game, you know, like it was like, okay, we didn't have enough time to get in between two cities. So it's like, well, but they didn't, what do you want to kick them out? You know, I don't want them to leave. I want them to have a good time. We were all having such a great time. I wanted them to stay.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeff wanted to play Crokinole anyway. So it's like, Crokinole, perfect. It's going to take 15, 20 minutes max.
Yep.
You know, there's no setup. You just put the board on the damn table and dump out the pieces and you're ready. You know, that's, I mean, that has the quickest setup of almost anything.
Yep.
You know, plus, I mean, we just had such a great time tonight. I wish we could have that group of guys every week.
Yep.
Yeah. If John would have came, it would have been terrible because, you know, he just brings down the whole group. You hear that? Stay home next time. Just kidding. No, but seriously, I would love to have these two groups fused more often. Maybe we'll see if we can do like a once every couple months. You know, we could just fuse them.
That'd be cool.
You know, we go to them sometimes. They come here. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe. I mean,
get my old gang group over here, too.
Yeah, well.
If they'll make the
bed. I don't know. That sounds
But terrible. Then we're talking about Todd.
You know, we don't want the Todd. No, yes. The more the merrier in this case. I mean, it was, I don't know, it was such a blast. It was great having all those guys over and kind of reliving the old group days, you know, where everybody's just having a great time. And
with the bigger groups, too, there are more chances of filler games being played.
For sure.
Because you kind of have that influx between games stopping and starting, and, you know, like if you're having multiple games played at the same time.
And it's hard, and it's a, you're right, it's a good idea, too, because, or it's a good, you know, recipe for filler games to get played as well, because when there's six people or even more, it's tougher to decide, you know, like, well, what do we play for six?
Yeah.
Do we split the group? What do we do?
Three and three.
Yeah, do we three and three it? Do we
somebody's done
five
with
and one it? What do we do with that poor son of a... No. But so, yeah, then you're like, okay, well, in the meantime, let's play Ink and Gold or something like that, you know, and just, you know. So, I don't know. It's really cool. Filler games, I love them.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I think they're some of my favorites.
I think they are, too.
Yeah.
For you. I mean, I really do. Yeah. Like, I can tell that that's kind of your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you're right at home with filler games. When we went to Grand Con. Yep, that's right, Grand Con. You ever heard of that? When we went to Grand Con, I expected, we talked about this last time in our convention episode, but I expected really to play the longer games because that's what I always thought I would do at a convention. And you guys all had a completely different mindset. Just play as many games as you can. And it was all filler games.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I found The City, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, maybe I should put that on the list. Let's stop this. Give me some time.
Oh, you only have 19 on there.
I know.
You need
You're right. I should probably add some. Quit looking.
I thought this was top five.
It is top five, and six, and seven, and eight, and nine, and ten. But yeah, that was a blast, and we had almost more memories.
With the filler games.
With the filler games.
We sprinkled in some longer games, but the fillers were...
You're right. The Caverna, where I crushed Tom Vassell into a fine powder. That was a longer game, and that was memorable. Catacombs was great. That was pretty memorable.
Yeah.
What else did we play?
Flick 'em up.
Yeah. Did I tell you?
That's not really a...
Flick 'em up's in my auction.
That's all right.
Oh, you looked like you were going to kill yourself for a second there. Like, no.
I'm not that attached to it. It's not a filler game. Or is it?
I like it. I do like it. I don't... I think I have enough Dex games that I would rather play.
Yeah.
You know, look, it is good, but I was kind of
at first... not at the pinnacle.
Well, I'm a little bummed because I bought the expansion, and I didn't get to play that, but... Which we covered in our expansion episode. As we covered in our expansion episode, that's what happens, man. I buy expansions, and they never just get played, so...
Just stop doing it.
But hey, if I want to go to Gen Con, which I am this year... It's already funded with my from the auction I've run. Gen Con's already funded. Hotels paid for, tickets paid for from the auction.
Nice.
Already. So anything else bonus is just crack and hookers.
Extra money for me?
I said crack and hookers.
Oh, no.
Well, you can... I'll snort you if you want.
No, that's fine.
Oh, then I'm buying crack
that's and hookers. That's a lot of hair in the nostrils.
I don't want that hairy planet anywhere near my nose.
All right, back on
track.
Okay,
back to fillers. What were we talking about again? Yeah, so... I think I have... Like, if I looked at my collection and I saw, like, the majority of games that I owned, fillers take a very large portion of my collection. Where I mean, okay.
Maybe two shelves?
Well, first of all, define that for me. What would you do? How would you define a filler game? One man's filler game is another man's not filler game.
Yeah. Well, something that, like you mentioned before, plays fast.
Mm.
Something that...
Yeah, but go deeper into that. What is fast?
Well, for me, it would be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, not more than a half hour.
Not more than half. See, some people might say if it's anything less than an hour would be a filler game. And that's tough. I don't know. It depends on the situation, I think. Tonight, Between Two Cities, I might classify kind of as a filler, maybe. I mean, it doesn't take that long. But tonight, there's no way we could have gotten that played. So I wouldn't have called it a filler in that case.
Well, it depends on what you're used to. If you're playing 2 or 3 hour long games.
Good point.
An hour long game is a filler.
I guess if you're playing ASL, you know, Advanced Squad Leader, then I guess, you know, something like Shogun is a filler game. You know?
Ugh.
Yeah, war gamers, how do they do it?
We
will not have a war game episode.
We're not?
I don't think so. The episode would be as long as 18 regular episodes if we talked about it. No, actually, that's not true. It would be way less because I know nothing. The only one I have is Sekigahara.
I think we should try to figure something out for that.
Do you really?
Yeah. But maybe not specifically. We'll work it in.
Okay.
So, we'll, you know.
Whatever you say, Master.
We'll get it going.
Lord Pete.
It has to be mentioned, right?
Yeah, well, I guess we technically just mentioned it now.
I guess.
Can't we call that good? I'm just kidding. I have nothing against war games. They're beyond my level of comprehension. I'm so stupid. I had bought Washington's War. Have you heard of that? It's supposedly like a lighter, I think, introduction into CDGs, which is a card-driven game, which is like a sect of war games. Hmm. Yeah, it's right. There's like block war games, CDGs, Hex and Counter. Yeah. You know, stuff like that. Anyway, it's just one subtype genre of a war game. And this was supposedly a lighter one. The rule book was 40, 50 pages.
Hmm.
I got 20 pages in before my brain just melted and it was coming up my nose. And Heather was like, you should probably stop that. You know, I had to give it away. I even went on, there's like a Vassal tutorial, you know, which is like a computer-aided thing that user Air Judden on BoardGameGeek gave me to it was a tutorial to learn, like a walkthrough, and I was so lost. I felt so dumb after that. I was like, I don't think I can do this. So I have a couple. I have Maria, I have Sekigahara, which is great, but I just, most of them are just beyond my level of
ability. What we're talking about here is the opposite of a filler.
The antithesis of, yeah, for sure. Exactly. All right, back to fillers yet again. We're being tangential.
I gotta keep reeling you back.
I know. Hey, look, there's a butterfly. So I don't know. See, again, there's games that like could be a filler, and then they could go longer. So how do you classify? Like Go could be a filler. You know.
Yeah.
If we're playing on the 9x9 board, 19x19, no way. But the 9x9 board, it's like we can get through a game in 10 minutes.
But that's maybe because we don't know how to play it.
No, that's definitely because we don't know how to play it.
But I can see, you know, if you knew the game more thoroughly, then it may be more thought, you know, more time between.
For sure. Especially, on the 9x9 board, it's going to end quick no matter what.
Yeah.
There's just no territory
set
to play.
Number of spaces.
Yeah, I mean, on the 19x19, it can take hours.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, let me just rattle off a little bit of a list. Not the top five list. I'm just going to, just because people might be like, okay, filler games, I still don't really know what you're talking about. You know?
Games. They're not going to be written in BGG that way.
No,
right?
Nothing says
there's
filler.
No category or anything.
Nope. It's really a very kind of user defined, you know, your own self. You kind of, after you play so many games, you understand. And you listen to discussions on board games and you go on Board Game Geek and you read things. You kind of understand these concepts more. So, you know, we're trying to kind of give you as much help as we can on what they mean to us. And I would say to most other users on there, you know, it's kind of a pretty universally adopted concept, you know, what filler games are. But there is definitely some contention on some games,
which
whether or not they are or not.
Yeah.
But games like Suro,
yeah,
you know, or Sushi Go or Roll For It.
Yeah.
Games like those are filler games. For Sale is a really popular filler game.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about too many because I don't want to name any of these games on Jeremy's list, but but there's a lot of games like that are, you know, they play relatively quickly. A lot of them tend to be in smaller boxes because they usually have less components to them.
Yeah.
You know, so they're a lot lighter on the brain.
Right.
Which, as we said, you know, like cleanse the palate a little bit. Again, that's not to mean that they can't be thinky and, you know, and give you that, you know, that crunch. But for the most part, they're just quick, fun.
Streamlined.
Very streamlined, very thin rule set games.
Often a lot of card games.
Yeah, there are a lot of card games, like straight card games in little card boxes that are, you know, classified as fillers. So with all that talk about fillers,
should we do our top
five? Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! The Gamecasters start a top five list. Is this our third one? Is this our third list?
I think so.
We did two player?
We
Dex?
Did. And now it's filler.
Filler. And that's a natural progression.
Yeah.
That's how you usually go. Okay, so let's start with our number five. I'm going to start today.
Yeah.
I think you started the last two times, right? Number five is a game I mentioned earlier. For me, and it's definitely a filler game. However, it's kind of circumstantial because you're not going to play it with just, you can't really play it with two. You don't want to really play it with three. It needs more. It would have been great for the group we had tonight, and that is Ink and Gold.
Okay.
Or the original version was called Diamant, if you've heard of that. So what Ink and Gold is, it's a straight push your luck game.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own little tent, and then each player has two cards. One card basically says, I want to go in the temple. One card says, I want to leave the temple. Then there's a deck of cards in the middle. A card comes up. It's either going to be a card with gems on it or a hazard card. Any two of the same hazard will kill you, and you lose everything. If a gem card comes out, the players that are in the round split all, like say the card says 15, and there's three of us. All three of us get five gems to go in front of our, teepee thing.
Tent.
Yeah. Those five gems go in front of there. And then we decide right then, do we want to stay in the temple or leave the temple with those two cards that I said you had? So you pick one of those, you play it face down, everyone reveals it at the same time. Whoever leaves takes those gems, like any amount of gems you have in front of your tent at that point, and put them under your tent. You have them permanently for the rest of the game. If you stay in, you risk getting dying by those hazards, but you also are pushing your luck to get more gems. You know, the hope is to get more gems. The deck of cards is about even. It's got about half hazards and half gem cards. So it's really like, I don't know. And most of the time you get one player who's like, I'm just literally never going to leave. So here we go. Just keep going. Oh, I died. You know, that player usually doesn't fare too well. But that's where the trick of the game is to know.
When to calculate,
when do I stop? It's fun to not stop. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's got good drama to it.
It sure does. But it's great to just like see. And sometimes you get on those runs where you're the only one in, and now you're the only one getting treasure, and you get the 17 card, and you get the 14 card. And you're like, oh, screw all you, you know. And then equally, sometimes it happens where you're the only one in, and you have so much treasure in front of you, and you're like, one more card. All right, one more card. And you flip it over, and it's that second snake, and you're like, motherfucker. You know, and you just kill yourself. But I love it. It's great. What do you think?
I played it. It's great. It's a good game.
It is. Wow. That's deep.
We agreed.
That's weird.
What happened?
I know. We've been like, there's been some tension between us lately. This has been, you like leapt across the table at me the other day, and I had to like cut the thing and start over.
I'm surprised you survived that.
I have bandages still. It hurts really bad. I have medication to take.
I'll finish the job. Sooner or later.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what's your number five?
My number five is Coloretto.
I have not played this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've almost bought it like 100 times. What is it?
I don't own it. It's a very simple set collecting game. But it has some really, it forces some really interesting choices. It does have the press your luck thing, just like the one you just mentioned. But basically you have like three sort of stacks of cards. They're not really stacks, but three sections of cards, and you're just drawing
colors?
And placing them. Yeah, and you have a set, or there's, I think, six different colors, and then you have a couple wild card, and then you have just straight points. And those cards are flipped face side up, and you're having to choose which kind of set you're going to take into your hand.
Oh.
And you're, like, building, you know, you want to have not too many of one, or multiple colors. You want to have like two or three that are, you know, you have the majority in basically to score. So if you have too many different colors, then you end up losing points, get negative points and stuff. So it's a really good game.
That's
you should
cool
check it
I
out.
Do want to try it. Yeah. It's quick, right? I heard. And
oh yeah, it's,
yeah, people talk about it all the
15
time.
15 minutes probably.
Yeah, and it's probably pretty cheap, huh? Or is it in print?
Like $15.
I never know if
that's, I think it's still,
know,
in print.
Yeah, I've heard awesome things about it. And there's like a sister game, Zuloretto, right? Which is supposed to be similar, just uses animals instead of colors. Is nothing like it?
That's a whole different thing. I think that's a tile laying game.
Oh, I have no idea. I just had the Oretto, and so I just assumed they were similar.
Yeah, I think that's a tile laying game. That's a little more involved.
Okay.
But the Coloretto, definitely check it out.
That's super cool.
It's just cards. There's nothing else.
Okay. So Ink and Gold and Coloretto.
Number four.
My number four is a little teeny tiny little game from AEG called Love Letter.
Really?
Yes. Love Letters. Just 16 cards, I think, is all it is. And I love it because I can play it with two. I can play it with four. I mean, it only goes up to four. But it doesn't seem like it would be good with two. It's one of those games you play and you're like, how do you play it with two? It's still so fun. So if you haven't played Love Letter, all you're trying to do is you're trying to write the most letters and get the most letters through to the princess. Letters are just represented by little cubes. So depending on how many players you play with, a certain number of cubes will win. And the way to win, it's kind of like tricks, like different tricks. You just have to be the last one in. You want to get everybody out. If you're the last one in at the end of the trick or round or whatever it's called, then you get a cube. You know, and it's cool, though, because there's all these different cards, you know, from 1 all the way to 8, I think, are the numbers. And they're all different. You know, there's, like, the guard, there's the baron, there's the princess, there's, you know, the countess, who's really big and busty. there's the prince, there's the king, there's, you know, the thief or whatever. There's, like, a bunch of... that. I might make that. But there's some really, really cool... And they all have their own power, basically. And so, on your turn, you have two cards in your hand. You have to play one. That's all you have to do. You have to play it. You play it, you read what it says, and you do what it says. Usually, it's attacking another player, like, calling him out or... you know, doing something like that, trying to get them out. And it's just, it's quick, but it's not so quick that it just feels pointless. I really enjoy it. And like I said, I can play it with two and have just as much fun as I can when playing it with four. It blew me away just because there's so few cards to it. And it comes in a little drawstring pouch. Well, the original one did. There's like 100 different versions now.
And was that at the time where microgames were starting?
Yeah.
That's kind of like the first
mm-hmm.
of the group.
It took kind of the game community by, they were like, what? This is 16 cards? That's all it is?
Yeah.
And it's this good? You know? It's like, I like it a lot.
Just for our listeners, a microgame is just a really, really compact game. It's like less than 20 cards.
Sometimes it's only one. Like, yeah. Coin Age?
Coin Age is one, mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're interested in that microgame idea... check it out.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
They blew up two or 3 years ago, they blew up. You know, I have Coin Age. It's cool. It's on a credit card. You just put it in your wallet, and then you play with pocket change.
Yeah.
You know, you can play it at restaurants. Cool. That's, I think, what the micro games market is perfect for. You know, where you're at restaurants waiting for your food or at the bar or something like that, you can just, you know, play those. And you don't have to carry anything. It's just in your pocket. So
yeah.
It's super cool. So, yeah, Love Letter is my number 4.
A little bit more about Love Letter when
no.
that first came out.
I mean, okay.
Yes. No. Yes. When it first came out, there were a lot of people retheming it, and I think
there's so
that
many.
That game had a lot of people self-theming, you know, like they would just do their own art for it.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of, like, I think if you go on BGG. And,
like in the file section?
Yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of people that have different artwork that's like an alternative graphic.
Might that be one of the most rethemed games?
Probably.
I mean,
I'm not an expert on
even,
that.
Even, I mean, okay, actually, Munchkin is probably the most rethemed game.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is user rethemed.
For sure. Well, even you know, published rethemes. There's like Adventure Time Love Letter. There's Batman Love Letter. There's like Lord of the Rings Love Letter. Yeah. There's a ton.
It's just so easy to do it that way.
Yeah, because it's all the same core game. You just change the art, really, and, you know, the powers all do the same thing. But I love it. It's very cool.
Cool.
Number 4 for you.
Sushi Go.
That was on my short list of 19.
It's probably like 18.
Yeah.
It's, again, another set collecting game, but it's...
it's got your favorite card drafting kind of type thing.
Yeah, I love card drafting. And basically card drafting is everybody gets a hand of cards and you pick one and pass them along so that you're just picking out one at a time. And there's another game called Seven Wonders that's... in that same realm.
I would say Sushi Go is Seven Wonders' little brother.
Yeah.
It's a great if you're going to introduce people to Seven Wonders, everyone says Seven Wonders is so super light, and it's kind of light, but if you're new to games, it's kind of like I've found that it's not the best game to introduce people to card drafting, because there's just so much to it. So Sushi Go is like perfect to ease them into that. You play Sushi Go first, and then when you play Seven Wonders, you're like, okay, this is going to be very familiar to you because you played a game just like this.
Yeah,
you know, it's a great introduction to card drafting.
Yeah, so it's obviously about sushi, but there's different types of sushi and they score differently. So you're basically collecting sets to score those points in each type of sushi, basically, right?
It's adorable.
Yeah, it's a fun little game. So really cool artwork. It comes in a little metal tin. Definitely check it out.
I think it's very cool. I like it a lot too. Yeah, it was. I went back and forth on putting it in the top 5. Yeah. I like it that much. You can get it at Target now.
Huh.
Yeah, there's a handful of games that are, you know, going to Target, and that's one of them. Yeah. All right. That was a love letter for me, and a sushi go for Jeremy. Number three for me is a game that I played a few years ago. It just come out, and user Sphere, if anyone knows Sphere on BoardGameGeek, he's a pretty popular, famous dude on there. In passing, one day, there was some game, I can't remember the game, it might have been Ra the Dice Game, somebody was talking about. And they're like, I don't know why you'd play that when King of Tokyo does that, and, you know, half the time it's way more fun. And I was like, King of Tokyo? What is King of Tokyo? This was like 2011, like when it came out or whatever. And I looked it up. I was like, that looks pretty cool. Bought it instantly. And I played it like, and this is not, I'm not exaggerating. I played it like 30 times.
Wow.
In the first like 2 months.
Yeah.
I was blown away. It's just this, I mean, I don't know if anyone's not played King of Tokyo at this point, but if you haven't, Yahtzee mechanic, so you got a handful of dice. You're all playing as a monster. Everyone's got a monster. Somebody's King Kong. You know, somebody could be the Kraken. Somebody's kind of like Cyber Bunny.
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Yeah. So and then in the center of the table is Tokyo. One player is in Tokyo, and when it's that player's turn, they roll a bunch of dice and they can attack. If they attack, the person in Tokyo attacks every other player outside of Tokyo. When it's the player outside of Tokyo's turn, when they roll the dice and attack, every other player is only attacking the player in Tokyo. You want to stay in Tokyo because if you keep Tokyo when it's your turn again, you get bonus points.
Yeah.
And you win if you either kill all the monsters or if you get to 20 points. So Everybody wants to go in Tokyo to get points, but you don't want to be in Tokyo because you're getting ganged up on and getting attacked.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool. And there's also a bunch of cards you can play. You know, to play in front of you to make you more powerful or increase your, give you more dice or, you know, do really cool things. Yeah. And it's quick and it's simple and it's mindless and it's hilarious. And, you know, then the expansion came out, the power-up expansion, which just adds, like, everybody gets their own special power. You know, maybe Cosmic Encounter started that, who knows? But, you know, if you want a little more complexity, that adds a little more complexity to it. I prefer it, honestly, without it, because I like it for just the raw simplicity of it. It's fantastic. It's got great artwork. It just appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, so King of Tokyo.
Nice little cutouts of the monsters.
Yeah, it's very cool. There's a bunch of stand-ups you can get for it. Yeah, they're little stand-ups. What do you think of King of Tokyo?
I like it. Yeah. I mean, I probably started playing it when you bought it. When was that?
Sure. Yeah, like 2011.
Yeah. We had that in the group. I think Jason or Todd bought it. And we played quite a few games of that.
Yeah.
So it's very good. I had it for a while. I traded it because I just didn't have the group to play it with. Yeah. You know,
and it just, you don't want it to just sit on your shelf unplayed. Yeah. So it's a bummer.
But I always had fun playing it. So
yep, it's a game in my collection that has survived many auctions. I run an auction a year pretty much, and I also trade the crap out of it. My games are probably on the shelves like shuddering, like please don't trade me, sir. You know, don't sell me away. But King of Tokyo has survived all these years. King of Tokyo, Cosmic Encounter, Small World, there's a handful of games that I just have never traded away, will never trade away. It's just one of those, it'll always stick around, because it's a great game to introduce, even now, to just people who don't know games, you know? A lot of filler games can also kind of double as gateways.
Yeah.
You know, because of the small rule set, because of the high fun factor, they're just great. I think you can get King of Tokyo at Target, too, even.
Probably.
Yeah. I think they sell it there. It's fantastic. It's from, you know, Yellow Games, and it's just like, I don't know, I love it. It's fantastic. I think it's
very easy.
Is it Richard Garfield?
Very easy to get people to play that.
It is Richard Garfield. Yeah, it's a great, 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 great game.
Yep.
So that's my number three. What about you?
My number three is Yardmaster.
Oh, the Train Man.
By Crash Games. I actually demoed the game in 2014 at Grand Con.
Oh.
With the developer there from Crash Games.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Look at you.
Instantly fell in love with it. It's a card game. That's all there is. Cards and a few little tokens. That's about it. But it's a resource management type thing where you're drawing resources and you're trying to build your trains.
It's kind of set collection too, right? You're trying to score, you have to get the set. Yeah.
So you have different colors and also different types of, or not, different colors and different numbers, but the resources are different types, like coal and wood and stuff like that. But it just, it flows really well. It plays good for two. It plays good with four. It's just a very interesting game.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
I don't really like it.
You don't?
I know. Isn't that crazy? This is one of the first ones that you've liked a lot that I don't really like too much. I played it a few times. I don't mind it. It doesn't...
just doesn't grab you?
It just doesn't grab me for some reason. I'm not sure what it is about it. Oh, Jeremy's soul is escaping and leaving right now. I can just see it drifting out of him.
I'm not worried about it.
It's just... No, I don't... I would definitely... I know you like it, and I would play it with you whenever you want to play it. It's not like I don't... like I hate it, or I'm not going to play it, but I don't know if I would choose it. I don't know what it is. It doesn't... maybe the couple times I've had a rough time with it. Like, you know how you just sometimes you don't get it?
Grasp it. Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I have a tough time figuring out how to do well. I don't know why. It's so simple. But the few times I've played it, I've done pretty poorly. And I'm not saying that's the game's fault, but for whatever reason, it didn't...
just didn't click.
It didn't just, like, grab
did
on.
Did we ever play hold. It with more than just the two of us?
Yeah. We played a four-player game the first time we played.
We did. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That was the worst game I played of it. I had it. Really? Now, I remember right then, I was like, I did not like this. We played it again with two, and I liked it better.
Okay.
So maybe I just need to play it again with three, and it'll be Baby Everybody. Bear's Porridge.
It's not for everybody, but
no, it's good. It's good. I think it's got nice art. It's very simple. It's got a good rule set. It has the recipe of everything I like in a filler game. It didn't do it for me, you know, for whatever reason.
All right.
Have you played Yardmaster Express?
I haven't.
I wonder what.
I'd like to try that.
Is it just even smaller?
I don't know. Like, I think the mechanics are different.
Because how could they make that game simpler?
I know.
Right? Kinda I don't weird. Understand. We'd have to.
I think the cards are different shapes, too. It might be square. I don't know. But the artwork for me just draws me into that old time trains, you know, like.
Sure.
And the artwork, relates to that, like 1950s kind of look.
Very like back simple. When you were born.
I was born around the same time Cosmic Encounter was out.
Really?
You weren't even a twinkling in somebody's eye.
I was. Well, about 10 years later.
Whippersnapper.
After that, I had Whippersnapper. So anyway, that was number three. So King of Tokyo and Yardmaster.
Yep.
Number two. We might start having crossover here. I don't care.
You better not.
Uh-oh. Actually, we won't. I know we won't. We'll at least have different versions. Although you might not have this at all. All right. I'm just going to cut to the chase. Number two for me is The Builder's Antiquity. Uh-oh.
All right.
I'm guessing if you have The Builders, it's probably
Middle
Ages.
Call
to the New. I played The Builders. We talked about The Builders before, but I played The Builders at Grand Con last year. Jeremy mentioned The Builder. He's like, let's play The Builders. And again, I was like, why do I play these games that I've never heard of? And if I haven't heard of it, then it must suck. You know? Like, it was the mentality I had. I was just like, oh my God, I don't want to play The Builder. We played it, and I could not believe how much I loved it. It gave me so many ideas for a game I was designing. I was like, I want to do a mechanic like this. I love it.
Yeah.
Where you just take a card for free and put it in front of you, and then you pay to attach it to something. I love that. That just, like, oh, it's great. It's kind of, The Builders, for me, replaced Splendor.
Really?
I wasn't looking to replace Splendor, because I love Splendor. But I played The Builders, and I was like, I don't think I need to play Splendor anymore. It does what Splendor does. With a little bit more, the art's better. It's just better. I just like it better. I mean, it's a little bit more meaty.
Seems like there's more going on.
Yeah,
with it,
not too much, but enough that it just appeals to me. The theme, the antiquity theme, that like I love the Egyptian style stuff. It's I love that stuff. The art, the style of the artwork is again. If I could like make art for my game, I would want it in that style. It's so
kind of cartoony.
Fun. Yeah, it's cartoony, but it's not like goofy.
No.
You know, it's just
it kind of has an anime sort, a little bit of an anime
it sure
feel
does.
To it.
And the cards are clear. You can tell what everything does. It's like it's a great, great graphic design choice. Whoever was in charge of graphic design knocked it out of the park. I love the game. It's a race to 17 points. Basically, it's the builders. You're basically building buildings. Which, I mean, how many games are you building buildings? All of them? But this one, you just take cards from the middle, and they're worth a certain amount of points. You send your workers that you have to work on the buildings by paying money. when you complete a building by having enough, you know, each worker has some resources. The building has resource requirements. The worker has resources, and it's all on the cards.
Yeah.
There's no extra components.
And they just line up.
Yeah, you just line the workers up on the building. As soon as the building's completed, it flips over, usually gives you some money payout, and then it gives you some points.
Yep.
And then once you have 17 points, you win, and it's over. And it's quick. Plays in 20 minutes, usually. Yeah. Sometimes less than that, even. It's just...
And even if you lose the game, it still feels like you had fun. Like, there isn't a lot of drama with it.
It's, no. It's one of those games where... Istanbul is one of those games. And you I think you might have played that. You watched us play it at the first Nerdfest you came to. But it's a game, like, where everyone is... There's not usually one person that has, like, nothing.
Yeah.
Everybody's usually in it. And then it's one person, close. Oh, I triggered the end game and I won.
Yeah.
But it's usually like 17 to 16 to 14 or something like that. So everyone's always in the mix. And games like that are great, I think, because everyone is usually involved and engaged. And there's a lot of games where, you know, one person's 30 points behind and not having a good time. And the other three people are like vying for first, second, and third. You know, and that doesn't usually happen in a game like The Builders.
Yeah, it seems like everything's within one turn.
Yeah. And I think it just strikes that balance. It's perfect. I love it. Yeah, so the antiquity version, I'm guessing you might have one of the builders on your list?
Well, yeah, the builders is my number two, but well, it's good. Better because it's older.
We'll see. You are a fine wine.
Well, yeah. You
know. I was going to say you had a very nice nose. I don't know anything about wine. What is it? A navel?
A palate?
I have no idea. I do not drink. So I could not tell you a first thing about wine. You have earthy afterbirth.
Or $5, $10, $15.
You're talking pizza?
What?
Anyway, the builders. So Jeremy has the Middle Ages version, which was the first version that came out. And I'm talking about the Antiquity version, which is the far superior version that came out afterward that adds everything better and makes the game just even better. Which I think you meant to put. You meant to put the Antiquity version. We'll just say that you did. And
figure. Yeah.
The regular version is all what I explained. That's all it is. It's just you buy the buildings and put the workers on them. And it's super awesome. And then the Antiquity version added a couple different things onto it that, in my opinion, made it that much better. Because there's just a couple more things you can do. There's these prisoners. Yes, they're prisoners.
Yeah.
And they're not slaves, they're prisoners.
Serfs.
And you right. You can use those, and it's cool because you don't have to pay them to work because they're prisoners. But you can free the prisoners if you pay certain money. And because if you don't free the prisoners, they give you negative points at the end of the game. But if you free them, they don't give you the negative points anymore, but now you have to pay them to work. So it's I really like that. And then there's these cool clear cards that you can put over the top. They're like, it's called like the university cards. You can put them over the top of another worker to basically increase his goods that he produces.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool. It's very cool. I just like having those options there. It's very cool to have those available. They don't do so much to the game, in my opinion, that makes it too complex or convoluted or some games add expansions and stuff that takes it from a filler to a non-filler. But you don't really want that because the substance of the game isn't really sustainable to go that long, but this doesn't do that, in my opinion. And you can still play it regular way. You just don't have to play with those cards. So I don't know why you wouldn't just always buy the Antiquity version. The only reason would be the theme.
I think there's a different mix of cards.
Bullshit.
Actually. There's a different mix of worker cards in the base versus the second one. So
in the Middle Ages
version.
With
the Antiquity, what they did, they added that prisoner card. And they added the upgrades and stuff, but I think the workers themselves, regular worker cards are a little different.
We'll have to check into that. Yeah.
So I think the original Builders is just a little more basic.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's the same game, just a little more basic.
And I wouldn't say that.
And the theme is different. It's the Middle Ages instead of the Antiquity.
Yeah, it's not any harder to learn.
No, not at all. Yeah, the Antiquity doesn't add complexity to make it, you know, more difficult. No way, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So number two, we rocked that. Mental high five. Done. The Builders. Check it out. Either one. The Middle Ages or Antiquity. Whatever. I think you just pick it based on theme. In my opinion, I would always go for Antiquity just because you don't always have to play with those extra cards. And I don't know that there's enough difference in the workers that you would even notice because I never noticed. I've played both versions a few times. I didn't notice any difference. But they're amazing games. Jeremy, like, That was probably the best recommendation you've ever given me, I think, that I've nice. Noticed. I loved that game. So great job for you. Number one, I'm going to guess might be similar. My number one, Yes Please, No Thanks, is my number one.
That's my number six.
Oh, just narrowly avoided. It
might have been.
Well, that's good. We don't have overlap for number one. I'm happy about that. So, No Thanks. Oh, it's a great little tiny little card game. It's amazing. I think we talked about it before.
Yeah, I think maybe last week.
I don't think it was last week. I think it might have been
episode 8.
I don't know. You're getting so old. It's hard for you to just keep remembering when we did stuff.
That's why I have you around. You're supposed to remember.
Nope, I'm worse. I have the I have the memory of a goldfish.
We played it at some point this last year.
Yeah, we played it. We definitely played it at Grand Con, and we played it here at Game Night a few times.
Yeah.
But it's great. I mean,
it's always fun.
I love it. It's fantastic. You never quite know, because you always remove a certain amount of cards from the game, so you never know if you're going to be able to make those chains.
Yeah.
You know? So, if you didn't listen to our other podcast episode that had that in it, I'll briefly go over the rules. You basically have a stack of cards that go from 3 to 35, I think, and the goal of the game is to get the least amount of points. You have 11 chips in front of you, and those chips represent negative points. The cards represent points. When a card comes up, say the card has number 20 on it, if you take that card, you can take it. So you can take the card and put it in front of you. But now you have 20 points, and you don't want points. So what you do is you say, no thanks, and you place a negative point chip on it. And then the next person's turn. And so they're still not going to want it because it's 20 points, but it has a negative point chip. But then they'll pass and say no thanks. And then the next player will say no thanks. And eventually that card starts to look pretty good because it's still a number 20, but now it has all these chips on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, each chip really reduces that number by one. And you have to have chips in your hand to say no thanks to the bigger cards later. And it's just, oh, it's great.
It's like, when do you pick the card up? You know, do you take it so no one else can get all the chips? Or, you know...
Yeah, sometimes do you do that. Sometimes you feel like you have to do that, even though it's going to be bad for you. You're like, I don't want...
Because if you don't have any chips, you take the card.
You have to take the card if you have no chips. Number 35 comes out. Well, I got to take it. You know, that happens a lot, and it's just so much fun. And for that reason, I love it. I love it so much. And it's number one. What about you?
My number one is The City. You forgot about that, didn't you?
Listen.
What?
You can't... I mean, I am so bummed that you can't get that game in America. I could not, in good conscience, even put it on there. It's...
Yeah. God, sorry, it's so folks. Good. You can't buy it
it's
here
so
in the US.
Good. It's so good. It's I mean, it's like a... It's like Race for the Galaxy Lite.
Yeah.
Kinda. Not really, kinda. It's one of those games where you buy cards from your hand using other cards. So they're multi-use
San Juan?
Cards. San Juan, which is, San Juan is similar. Like Puerto Rico, card version of Puerto Rico, which is like Race for the Galaxy. You know, it's those type of games where you're buying cards from your hand with other cards. And again, it's a race to what, 40 points or 50 points or something like that. That Jeremy just never loses, so of course he puts a number one on his list. The guy hasn't lost a game and
it just clicks. I don't know, but it's just really well made. You know that the cards give you enough choices. You know you have to. You're kind of building your city. You know, to create these points. So you're building your ability to get more cards in your hand, so you can pay more to buy more expensive cards. It's got that nice little.
It's hard to know sometimes when to stop just earning income and start getting points. Yeah. And then it snowballs. Game I've ever seen, it snowballs from the first, like, five turns, everyone's making 6 points, 7 points, and then all of a sudden we're making 15 points, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's going to end next turn, holy crap.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome, because you can just play it a bunch in a row, and I don't even know how I'd quantify why I like it. It's just so good.
Yeah.
And it's never going to freaking come to America, right?
I think the only way is to either... pay for the shipping from somebody. I don't think it's even in print.
The copy we've played on had paste-ups on it, Jason's copy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's
the German copy.
Yeah, German copy, which you can't get anywhere either.
Yeah.
With paste-ups.
Yeah.
That people just like, you know, when I say paste-ups, people just print the English text and print it off, cut it out, and then paste it on the card.
Yeah. And there are a number of files on the BGG page. But they're not really well organized.
Yeah.
So there's not anything that, you know, like you can really like directly print out.
Oh, what a great game, though. Gosh, that game is good.
Yeah. I looked into retheming it myself, but it just there's so many cards.
Work. It takes so much work.
Yeah.
There's so... Ugh. Yeah, I think if that game was readily available, that would probably be number one, because we'd play it so much.
Yeah.
I think. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's it. No thanks. And The City. Ugh. Check out most of those games on BoardGameGeek. That's our filler episode. So next week, we had a couple different ideas. We're going to do... I don't know. We have a couple different possibilities. What do you think we might do next week?
We may possibly talk about game reviews.
I think that's a very, very cool topic. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's so many different reviewers out there. There's so many different mediums, ways to get to find reviews. Out. And yeah, there's so many different, some people just write positive reviews, you know, and we can talk about how, you know, negative reviews can sometimes be better.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, you might want to be a fanboy and not see that, but you might need that if you're going to buy a game. So, yeah, I think reviews is a pretty good topic. We'll hit that up next week.
Sounds good.
Along with whatever we played. So, this has been episode 10. What a great episode 10. Thank you guys for making it this far.
Yeah. Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome. Hopefully we can do 10 more, and then when we're at 20, we'll say hopefully we can do 10 more, and we'll get all the way to 2,000 eventually. But for Jeremy Pete, I am Ryan James, and you have been listening to The Game Casters.